Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Moon, Moo, and You, the Collective Wisdom. Our guest this evening is astrology's astrologer, Sheila Odette. We will be discussing addictions and how it manifests in a person's chart. I've been writing about alcoholism and drug addiction on my prayer blog, www.praytoheal.com. I have spent some time in the rooms of AA and feel very close to the subject. The call-in number this evening is 347-205-9200. Joining me now is Joan Adams.
And good evening.
Good evening, Joan.
I ran and took a quick walk between shows.
I know. I feel a little out of breath because I was rushing out. I was gathering wood quickly for the evening. It was very nice today, warmish and so forth.
Oh,
but
yeah, beautiful.
But it's down to 30, I think, tonight. But
I even saw some little daffodil buds. I love to see the daffodils.
Cool. I don't think we should eat them, though.
No, I don't think I'm going to eat them. But they were pretty.
For anybody who's wondering, we were discussing that on a radio show previous to this, and talking about eating all kinds of things. I think daffodils just might be poisonous. I'm not sure.
They may be. They may be.
That's
I think I've heard that.
That.
Yeah.
Don't want to take a risk.
But they are pretty.
Well, they are beautiful, and you're lucky to have them so early. In your part of the world, it's not early, I'm sure.
No, I'm ready for them. Ready.
Well, let me just bring on our dear friend Sheila Odette,
sure.
Astrology's astrologer. Hello, dear Sheila.
I don't think anybody's addicted to daffodils.
Hi,
well,
Sheila.
Hi.
It might kill you before you know. So.
Uh-huh.
That would be an interesting addiction.
Well, do you think we can talk about addiction as it applies to astrology?
Yes.
I'm sure we can.
Listen to me go, yeah. Don't you love me? Yeah.
I do love the yeah.
Yeah. Well,
like home.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because I work with an awful lot of addiction in my practice. And a lot of my clients are so called addicted, you know. But there are mental addictions, you know, emotional, chemical addictions, and a lot of times I work with spiritual addictions, as a matter of fact.
That's interesting.
Yeah, you know, I mean, when you're working with that kind of addiction, it's like they want to know what the chart says, you know, so that they think that the chart can run their life, or the tarot cards can run their life, you know?
I see what you mean, yeah.
And
people want their charts done before they can even make a move.
Well, I don't work like that, and people know that I don't work like that, because the chart, of course, is like, it shows you where the downfalls are and where there is repetitive experience going on, and some of the challenges in life, but it's not meant for that kind of prediction and that kind of, because no matter what you see in a chart, there's always many choices. It's a reaction to something, you know. The world is unfair, and everybody's going to have certain kinds of things that happen to them, but your ability to choose and react is what really is the choice. And So I got out some of the charts of actual, you know, chemical addictions in some way. So I was going to talk about, you know, we are dealing with some of the major people that are in the spotlight with addictions. And I thought maybe, first of all, I would talk about Tiger Woods because it is absolutely an unbelievable Mandela, of course, because I, you know, I wonder about Tiger Woods in the process of rehab, because in many ways he's so brilliant and his world is so narrow that there are not a lot of people that can get rapport to him, with him. Do you understand what I mean?
Yes.
There's not a lot of people that totally can understand the process of what he's gone through. So,
with him, aren't we talking about sexual addiction?
We're talking about the manifestation of a behavior that happened because his world is so narrow in many ways.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, if you have a golf club put in your crib, and then you have a father that says, you know, we saw him on, I forget, was it the Mike Douglas show or whatever, where he was a tiny little kid playing golf with Bob Hope. And you go, whoa, you know. And then you look at this chart and you see that he has the sun in Capricorn. And the sun in Capricorn in many ways climbs to the top of the ladder. But then he has what I call in astrology a mutual reception, which means the sun, the natural sign of the sun is Leo, and the natural player for Capricorn is Saturn. So he has the sun in Capricorn, but he has Saturn in Leo. And if you're looking at a lot of astrology, Saturn rules the father. So there's almost like this, if you become this elite golf player, I will love you. So the ability is always from childhood on, you have to in many ways perform for an external source. And if you don't perform for the external source, there may not be yelling or anything, but there is a lot of anxiety and shunning. And, you know, you can look at Andre Agassi the same way. Andre Agassi's father was a tyrant. Tiger Woods' father was not exactly known as a tyrant, but he was always there. So if you have a ballet shoes, dancing shoes, if you have a golf club, if you have a tennis racket, if you have any of these things at a very early age and you are told to perform for an external source, being that the parental family in the beginning, and then it extends out to the community, and then it extends to the world stage, and to Tiger Woods, he's in a very elite bunch up here. So there is some part that you look in the chart and you go, oh, he has Neptune conjunct the moon in Sagittarius over here, and Venus in Scorpio. So you go, okay, there is going to be something in the chart that is just like dormant that says, someday I'm going to get you. Mm-hmm. Someday this thing is just going to come out of me. Someplace where I'm free. Someplace where I feel like I'm doing something completely naughty. Completely. And that, you know, this time it's sexual addiction, okay? This time it's sexual addiction. You know, we can listen to the paparazzi, but we know that people knew this. I mean, come on. He was doing this in Vegas. People had to get him rooms. People had to get, you know, come on. The one room in the place was called Tiger's Room.
Right,
I mean, this whole one back room. So there it is. And then we set our heroes up on these high pedestals. And then when something like this happens, instead of in some way supporting them, we then just pull the carpet out and start really judging them and criticizing them and just, you know, all of the kind of things, you know. And even if his wife is coming to a place where she can understand this, the paparazzi goes, she should never go back with him. Well, this, sexual addiction is the most misunderstood addiction that there is. I have clients that have, you know, it is really a misunderstood thing. It's every bit as destructive as alcohol and drugs and other addictions.
Right.
It's that high. It's that instant high that makes you feel, and then right afterwards, it flips you down into the shame position.
But what about, okay. But and
go ahead, Joan.
Yeah, because to me,
mm-hmm.
It's about self-responsibility, and I just don't buy the addiction part of it. But with them, you know, that's just my opinion. Or with any of these guys, I think it's the new phrase word for letting the guys.
Well, a better word would be disease.
Well, excuse.
It's a disease. He didn't choose drugs and alcohol. He chose a sexual addiction. And there is no responsibility or willpower around an addiction, Joan. An addiction is an addiction.
I've got an addiction or two myself, but I don't know. I ain't got much patience with that, I have to be honest.
First of all, nobody tries to get high or nobody drinks to make themselves unhappy to begin with, right?
Right. I have no problem with that one.
Nobody does any of that to me. And somebody can sit at a bar with 10 drinks and somebody can have one drink and they're done.
Right.
So you go, okay, why does one person need 10 drinks and why does one person need one drink? And the thing about that is there's something in the brain that they have found that with the addict, it does not turn off. It just doesn't turn off. It's just, I want another one, I want another one, I want another one. There are great books out now, and that we are coming closer and closer to what you say responsibility, the ability to respond in a different kind of way. The first phase is like, I want to feel good. And then when you get past that, when the alcoholic gets past that or the drug addict or the sex addict, they go into the second part, which is I just have to have a drink or I have to have sex or I have to have food just to feel normal. And if I have a couple of drinks, you know, that's okay and that makes me feel normal. And then that doesn't work anymore. So it flips into the third part. And the third part is euphoria. And euphoria means I really want to get high. I really want to get drunk. And so then euphoria, after you're done with that, flips back into pain and shame and humiliation, which takes you back to guilt, which makes you want another, which takes you all the way back here. And after a while, you're just working you're not even working with normal. You're working with drinking and euphoria just to keep you normal. Because if you work with addicts, the real fear is getting sick. The real fear is to go through rehab and have this intense, terrible, terrible sickness. And I find in charts that they are, you know, Pisces gets a really bad rap. Right, Kate?
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, you know, there's certain signs that get a really bad rap with stuff, okay? And, an astrologer's, you know, cookbook astrology, you would look and is it okay if I say it's Kate's chart? Well, I gave it away, didn't I? So why am I even asking?
That's fine. Go ahead.
Okay. So if you look at this chart and you just see the sixth house, and the sixth house is perception of reality. That's what I call the sixth house. And you see in this chart, Mercury in Pisces, the Sun in Pisces, Jupiter in Pisces, and the North Node in Pisces. Some cookbook astrologer is going to look at this and go, Kate, you're a raving alcoholic or a raving addict. I mean, really.
Well, that's what they've said to me all my life.
But that's not true.
No,
that's not true, because then when you look at the other side of the chart, in the first house, you see Neptune in Libra, which has a finger of God to it.
Right.
And that Neptune rules Mercury, Sun, Jupiter, and the North Node in Pisces. It rules all that. Mm-hmm. So what your chart really is about is I found with a lot of addictive charts that they have a moon closing in on a sun. And I did research on this. And one of the highest forms of trying to heal something is addiction. And so it's almost, I look at the charts and I look at a lot of addicts that I work with and all as, this is a master class. You can't do it. You cannot do it with willpower. You cannot do it with saying, I'm just going to stop. You cannot do it without help. You have got to get down on your knees and say, this is bigger than me, right?
You say, please help me. Yeah.
Yeah, please help me. This is bigger than me. So so basically, when you look at the sign of Pisces, it looks like a fish with a string tied around it, right? There's two sides of it. And one side of it is the hero side, I call it, and the other side is the victim side. Now, it's all supposed to be the metaphorical sign of Jesus, Pisces. Lord, with the calendar and the year the way it was, I don't know how he could have been a Pisces, but I'm not going to go there, okay? Because that's what's in the books. He's a Pisces. So then you go along with that, and it means basically that some people tell the story of Jesus as he's a victim. He was crucified. He hung on the cross. He was beaten. He was this. The point is when you read the Bible very clearly, Jesus doesn't tell the story that way.
Right.
It's not interpreted that way. It's interpreted that you can heal from anything. If I can do it, you can do it. You know, you can overcome anything. And, you know, my thing, again, is when he was on the cross and he said, please forgive them. They just didn't get this yet. Maybe in 12,000, you know, years they might, but we still don't get it.
No.
We basically still don't get it. So,
the other side, don't you think the other side of Pisces and, of course, the Christ consciousness in Jesus, he was the greatest healer that anybody ever knew about. He was a healer. And Pisces is also a healer.
Yes, and he dealt with electromagnetic energy. I mean, he dealt with the whole basic neutrons and all that you know, within it, you can't make water into wine.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just not, the principle's not there. He dealt with alchemy. He dealt, but every sentence that he says in almost every chapter that you read is, this is happening because you believe it can happen. If I can do this, you can do this. He says it all the way through. It means basically he was trying to teach us that we all are healers. We all have the electromagnetic energy to heal. But we don't believe it. We don't have the ability to respond within ourselves that we are. And that's why they say, a lot of them that work with cancer, that it's easier to heal children. Because they go, oh, I can blow that up. Oh, I can do this. Oh, I can do that. Oh, yeah, I can handle that. And
right.
they have that belief, you know. I always go back to Star Wars. It's really interesting, you know. Just hang with me. I flip. Anyway, when he takes Yoda standing there, and the ship goes down, and he turns around and says, Skywalker says, I can't bring it up. And you remember that, you know, the famous line is, you know, you do or you do not do. There is no such thing as try. That's the famous line. The line after that is, you can't do it because you don't believe you can do it. That's the next line after that in the movie. And that's a really powerful line. Because if you have to believe that you can do it.
Well, that's what all that verse is about, except you become as little children.
Yes.
That's that whole connection there, right?
Yeah.
It is to me. It's, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, it's, and Jupiter, you know, the mutable signs like Pisces and Gemini. Now, we're talking with, you know, I also have John Edwards chart here. Love
well,
that, John.
Important. John Edwards, I was... campaigning for him at one point. You know, I did all kinds of stuff to try to get him elected. And
you obviously didn't look at his chart, did you?
Well, I'd like to hear about that in a second. I just want to make it clear that I was a total admirer of John Edwards. But the thing about him that, you know, usually if people are philanderers and if they, like Bill Clinton and all those people and Tiger Woods and so forth, you know, people can accept it or they can't accept it. But the thing about John Edwards is his wife, whom everybody who campaigned for John Edwards loved his wife, Elizabeth Edwards.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really difficult for us who loved the family and loved him and loved her that he would have, how could he possibly have done something like this? I mean, usually I could care less, but I find it very difficult to...
It's a betrayal, Kate. He betrayed you, he betrayed her, he betrayed everybody around him.
I really could care less if he betrayed me, but I feel very badly.
I think
for
you
her.
Should feel bad if he betrayed you, because after all, if he betrayed you, he can betray the whole country. You
well,
wonder
he betrayed
what
everybody. He betrayed everybody who worked for him and who loved him.
Yeah, and why wouldn't you love him? Because you believed in what he was saying.
Well, he had certain principles that I believed in, except that he. He has some sort of tragic flaw, that's for sure. So what's his chart say?
Well,
and when was he born, anyway?
He was born Wednesday, June the 10th, 1953.
Oh, Gemini.
Again, here you have the same kind of thing. It's the, you know, when you have the moon and the sun in the same sign,
mm-hmm.
And the moon is in a chart, as you're looking at it, the moon is on the right-hand side of the sun moving into it.
Mm-hmm.
It means basically it's a master teacher. And
yeah.
If you indeed have Gemini, Gemini is, I'm not putting all, I love Geminis, but you never know what you're getting. You never know what you're
right,
getting.
Right, right.
There's a lot of strategy that goes on with a Gemini. Now, he also has Jupiter conjunct the moon and the sun. He has four major planets in Gemini. And, you know, let me make myself clear here. I think that he does love his wife.
Oh, yeah.
I think, we're talking about Gemini. This Gemini thing, it's another mutable sign. It's another mutable sign. And this whole thing of these people that are running for office almost become gods to these people. I mean, listening to, what's his name, Young? I was amazed at the depth that went on there. That he would come home. Can you imagine most of us women, I don't know about you, but if somebody came home and said, you're going to take the credit for another man's baby, I don't know. Well, Joan, listen to you. I'm asking you what you would say. What would most women say?
What would I say? Bye.
And the next sentence out of his mouth was, it's for Elizabeth. We can't let her die thinking that.
Well, yeah, and everybody would, of course, say, oh, okay.
But she didn't cooperate.
Right.
She did not cooperate with the plan.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gets worse than that. I mean, you could not write a book that people would believe that the woman then moved in with them.
Did she?
Yeah, that's the whole thing. That's what his whole book is about. John Edwards then called him and said, will you hide her out? Will you take... So now this woman that thinks this other woman's pregnant with her husband's baby now is going to have that woman in her house.
Right.
And people are going to believe that?
Well, it is hard to believe.
Can you imagine paparazzi's rooms all over the country that they missed it?
Uh-huh.
Can you imagine they make up stories and here was a real story that was off the wall and they didn't get it? The only way they got it was that John Edwards screwed up.
Yeah.
John Edwards went to that hotel to see the baby. And there was a report. That's the only reason they were skipping around from hotel to hotel. They were flying around on this millionaire's planes, and another millionaire was footing the bill.
Yes.
So
well,
it was...
Now, it seems to me that now these people were talking about Tiger Woods and John Edwards, and I don't know if you looked at Bill Clinton's chart, but all the politicians that are acting completely weird about their sexual, you know, whatever it is that they're doing. And it seems like there's a power trip going on with these people. And it seems like it manifests in mostly sexual, it seems like it's sexual addiction. A lot of them are not alcoholics or even drug addicts. Well, maybe they are, you know, it's hard to say, but I don't think
there's the whole thing. You can't cross over lines with addictions, Kate. They manifest in different ways. Even drug addiction shows up differently in a chart than alcohol addiction. Alcohol addiction shows up more with Mars, and the drug addiction usually when you're working with that kind of chart, that shows up around Neptune. One is a way to release anger and rage.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times when it can't be released in regular, you know, in a regular way. And then the Neptune, the drug one, is usually to absolutely get out of the body, to absolutely get into a more perfect world. The point is you're not getting into that perfect world in any way by training to do that. You know, you then, you know, if you're working with the map of consciousness or the vibrational energy of consciousness, If you have the shame and guilt and apathy and fear and desire, the ones from where it vibrates from 20 to like 100, you know, where all the things of blame and despair and all those things, when you get up to desire and you use drugs or alcohol, then what that happens is you get euphoric and it flies you up to the higher consciousness level of vibrating. It flies you up really fast into vibrating about 540 or something. And when you're talking to somebody that's in a drug-induced state, they're talking about all spirituality in the world and floating and all kinds of stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then that goes away, and what happens is they slam back down into shame. Every time it happens, it gets worse and worse and worse. So they go from 540 vibrating at that high electromagnetic vibration, and they slam back down into that they have to go through shame at 20 and guilt and grief and fear, and then they get up to 100 with raging anger. And they go, now I have to use again. Because I want to flip myself back up into the higher vibrations. So the pride and courage that vibrate in the energy pattern of like 175 to 200 means you have to have the courage to get into the next level. And that means either, going to group, stopping. And I have worked with people that said they, and a lot of times it's a mutable sign that have stopped and they just said we stopped. And a lot of times it's Pisces.
Yes.
They just had this beatific something happened to them and slammed them on their knees and they said, I never had to use again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you go, whoa, and then you see that Uranus is really, see, the higher the planets of, you know, each planet that we have, the higher vibration of Mars is Pluto. The higher vibration of Mercury is Uranus. The higher vibration of Venus is Neptune. Those are the slow-moving, higher vibratory planets. So a lot of time when we're using, we're down in the vibrations of Mars and Venus and I'm entitled, which is what you're talking about, the entitlement.
Oh, yeah.
Of all of that goes on with addiction, and I don't care who I hurt. And then, of course, you have then the whole the people on the outside that are trying to hide it, control it, using blame on it. There's this whole other thing on around the way the other people are actually adding into the addiction. So there has to be a whole supportive group that supports the addict.
Well, enabling them completely.
Yeah. But they enable them in different ways. One way is control. I can control your drinking. One way is, you know, just enabling. One way is flat out lying. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
or denial. I don't think Elizabeth Edwards had any idea that John Edwards, or, you know, she was in a state of denial about what.
Well, look what she was dealing with herself.
Yes.
I mean, when you're in the state of trying to get well from a catastrophic disease, and then your husband's running for president, I don't think, and you're trying to raise a family, you don't have much time.
No, and it's all very stressful. I mean, that's what you just described. All those things are those three or four of the most stressful things that could happen to anybody.
Yeah, and a lot of time, you know, John Edwards, you know, toxic people are unable to speak what's real or what's true. You know. After a while, they don't even know what that is. And the way to keep in, if you ever work with one, they always point out what's wrong with you. Right away, they take the energy off of themselves and put it on you.
Yeah.
You know, you did this and you did that. You're the reason I'm drinking.
Right.
And so, you know, the way to really detox is they have to stand in absolute truth. But you have to own your part in supporting their addiction.
Yes.
And you have to, you have to make a new choice, and you have to announce, and you have to give it a voice and say, I'm not supporting that anymore. And you run the risk of really pissing him off, I want to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
And you create clear and strong boundaries, because intervention is going to come in some form, either death, rehab, prison, murder, suicide, illness, one of them.
Oh, yeah.
And if you're you know, I go along with you, Joan, in the fact that a lot of people think they're helping, and they're not. They're enabling. Again and again and again, you hear the story of enabling, you know? And, you know, I know that Elizabeth didn't know in the moment, but I think somewhere down the line, too many people, Kate.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think she wanted to hear it. Too many, you know, there's too many people around that.
Well, how does that go, that we cannot see what we cannot comprehend? You know, it's like a child can't see adult products in the grocery store.
Nope.
No, mm-hmm. We don't see what we
can't, you know, we don't see what we have not experienced.
See. Right.
Yeah.
You know, it was the furthest thing from our mind.
You know, you can tell somebody something and they'll hear you. You can even show them and they'll go, oh, wow, I really get that. But if they experience it and they're involved in it, they get it.
Right.
And, you know, it means they get it. And that is why our drug rehabs are too short. They only, in a month's time, they're only getting the stuff out of their system. They're only getting it out of their system. If it's not a 3-month time or a 6-month thing, it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And then they come back in a society and they relapse, and everybody goes, oh, wow, you relapsed.
That didn't work. Right.
I mean, the story of who? Robert Downey Jr. What recovery he did. I mean,
no,
we're talking if Sean Penn took you to rehab and said, now you're Sean Penn, we're talking here, flies you on a plane to rehab and you go in the front door and out the back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
well, what's his chart like?
Well,
he really had some problems, and seems like he threw it off.
Well, the point, you know, I was always astounded by Downey in the fact that his work was always exquisite.
Yeah.
No matter what, his work was always exquisite. Somehow he compartmentalized in his brain, right? The whole thing. around, and let's face it, his father had him smoking marijuana and doing drugs at a very early age. And when the parent is doing that, then the child, somewhere in the child's brain, it's too much. The brain's not developed, and the child thinks it's all right.
Yes. Yes.
The rehabs didn't work with him. What worked with him was the Kung Fu, the martial art program.
Oh,
that's what
right.
worked for him.
Right.
He switched the addiction to that,
mm-hmm.
and then he fell in love. And that woman, you look at that woman, and that is a no baloney woman, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He looks at her, and every time he looks at her, he goes, ask my manager, ask her, da-da-da-da. And now you're really looking at recovery when you look at him, and he has had the ability to keep that quirkiness too. A lot of times, I think a lot of these great actors and all think they're going to lose their talent.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
They think part of the creative process is, going to be lost in some way. I always have a quote that I read about addiction. And I saw it one day, and I saw it on a television show, actually, and I wrote it down, I played it back, and, I have come to believe that profound creativity emanates from a very deep place. No one has explained it yet. It's a mystery, and it's bound up with all kinds of demons. Sometimes you see them, and sometimes you don't. You say to somebody, do you see the demons in that person? Yes, but then when you see the demons, you also have to see the gifts. And now if you can accept that as true, you'll be able to deal with that person. And that just really hit me. Because a lot of these people with profound talent in all these areas are somewhere dealing with just as much the demon side.
Right.
And so, the whole thing around addiction, is to learn to tolerate pain and learn to manage emotions when you don't feel good without using. And you're always going to get the reinforcement that you think you need because you're dealing, a lot of times, you're dealing with outside people who don't want to play. They're saying you can't do that, da 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 da. But when you experience and get through, when somebody gets through to an addict, it's a profound moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's a profound moment when they flip.
Yeah.
But you can't set up your expectations that they're going to flip because your expectations are going to be blown up.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not going to do it on your calendar.
Right, right.
They
or
have
the
to,
way you would expect them to do it.
Yeah, well, I have Anna Nicole Smith's chart here, and she again has the moon coming into the sun. She was a Sagittarius,
mm-hmm.
and she has Mercury and Neptune in Scorpio, which was that voice that you never did understand whatever she was saying, It was like she was just, And despite all that, how did she ever even perform at all?
Mm-hmm.
You go, okay, I just don't really get that. And it's interesting. Patrick Swayze, too, I have his chart here, and he drank a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And one of his demons, and his wife left him for a period of time. And she said, you have to get it together. Now, when he again has the same thing, double Leo in fixed signs, the moon coming into the sun. And, his movies were profound, like Ghost. I mean, that was just a profound movie from the other side.
Yeah.
And you go, okay. So it's this whole part that's just like out of control. He also grew up in a dance studio,
You said something about doing exquisite work and being very addictive. That was something we learned from the movie This Is It and Michael Jackson. He was grappling with big-time drug use, and yet when he would get on the stage, he had perfect control of everything,
Well, and I worked with a really profound entertainer too. You remember Sherry Albert?
Yes.
She did sign language and danced and moved and everything. And I'm telling you, she came into a performance one night and she was absolutely downstairs, dead drunk. I mean, dead out, and the house was full. I mean, and I put her up against the wall and I said, "You're going to perform tonight. I don't care what." She stepped on that stage. Not only did she perform, some other actor dropped their line, and she picked the line up and brought them back in.
Oh, my gosh.
And then somebody was downstairs giving her coffee, and I said, "Don't give her coffee."
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I don't want her to come out right now and realize, you know, what...
Yeah.
It's a very... It's very, very interesting. It's all very... I think addiction is a real mystery in many ways. And
right.
I think that Dr. Drew on television, Drew Pinsky, I don't know if you ever watch any of his stuff.
No.
But he's running these rehabs. And,
Celebrity Rehab.
Yeah.
I just saw it the other night for the first time. That's a cool show.
Yeah, it's really profound, and you know Tom Sizemore, who's really a really fine actor. It's really sad to watch, but also that these actors and all can have the profound courage to know that this is going out to millions of people. I always am in, Chris. I have Scorpio Moon. I'm always in great admiration of people that can go on television, like Oprah Winfrey and Dr. Phil and that. And just lay it out there.
Mm-hmm.
Just lay their soul right in front of everybody. And I go, where do you go to get that kind of courage to do that? Because really they are in a process that they are healing somebody way out in some farm somewhere or something. You know, they're by the grace of God go I.
Mm-hmm.
And so these people are doing a great, and you know, Oprah Winfrey was a pioneer of that. I mean, she really was.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, she is. Totally.
Yeah. And what I say, you know, with addiction too, you know, in all, Tiger's whole speech, I listened very carefully. I thought the most profound line in the speech is not what you achieve in life, it's what you overcome. That line is so true. That line just really resonated with me. That he got that.
Well, you know what? He did. He got it
totally
by that statement. And I think that when people go through what we think and what people say or think is the worst thing that could ever happen to somebody, whatever that might be, certainly with Tiger Woods, is he fell from a very high place. But what happens, hopefully, is that he will be a completely different person as a result. He has the ability to be who he is in spite of the terrible, shocking things that people are... He must be feeling all those vibrations of people who are very disappointed in him.
Yeah, well, it's really not how hard you fall or what a hype. It's how you get up.
How you get up, right?
It's going to be real interesting to watch him. You know, Charlie, golly, I'm drawing a blank on Charlie's last name. But anyway, one of the announcers at the Golf Channel or one of the Golf Channels. But anyway, he wept during that speech. And,
of course.
People just gave him a fit, you know, and he said, "Look, you know, this man is pouring out his soul."
Yep.
And people were not... Well, most folks didn't buy it. You know, they gave Charlie Reimer. And we all love Charlie. He and Randy, old friends from high school. But but he was criticized for weeping. And
I think it's wonderful that he wept, and I think it's great that he had those feelings because it touched him with compassion. And everybody else was like, "Oh, boo," you know. Nobody had any compassion for Tiger Woods. I think it's so important. I need to, as far as John Edwards goes, have a little compassion for him, too, because, my gosh, you know, those people fell from high places, and it has to be one of the most painful things in the world.
Oh,
but it's also a master's class.
The family, mm-hmm. the family
yes.
suffering and the whole, you know, the whole picture of all of the people who are affected by something like that. You know, my
issue. Don't you think that Tiger Woods, his wife, had some idea about the way he conducted his life? You can't tell me that she was completely ignorant of this. She knew.
Well,
must have known when she married him that he was like that.
His caddy didn't know it, Kate. He compartmentalized.
Well,
his caddy didn't know it. His world of golf and his world of the children, his world of, she had two little babies. And when you have two little babies, you are pretty busy.
Yeah, you're right. Yep.
You got a lot of stuff going on. You're doing the thing, and then you go to some golf tournaments, and everything is peachy there. They were two different worlds. He was living in two different worlds.
Yeah.
And also John Edwards. On the campaign trail, he was with this chick.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the enablers that you're talking about. The people around him definitely knew what John Edwards was doing.
Yeah.
I mean, they knew him, and this guy protected him, and this guy said, I would have protected him with my life.
Mm-hmm.
And he did in many ways. But then, you know, I just want to say, if somebody knew that stuff about me and they were protecting me, I am telling you, I would treat them with kid gloves, would you not?
Oh, yeah.
I would love you. I would adore you. What do you want? And John Edwards turned on him. And not till John Edwards turned on him did this man expose what was going on.
Yeah, totally.
And I said, there's a person you should have kept close to, John.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You know, the point is, this man in some way could have been running our country. And you are going, what in a major decision, you know, would he do? And I thought that Oprah's line was the best line of all. How could you even get to the point that you would think you would want this guy to be president?
Yeah.
With this kind of deception.
Oh yeah,
I mean it's like profound. I mean, Tiger Woods is awful and all, and Robert Downey was awful and all, but they're not running the whole country.
Well, these politicians, they are absolutely ridiculous. I mean, I don't even know any that aren't. So
that's what I was gonna say, Kate. I think they're probably more of them into all that than we know.
Well, I'm sorry. Probably. Now, Joan, I bet you were very shocked when, is he a senator or whatever, that guy who pretended to be on the Appalachian Trail and was
He was only the governor of the state.
The governor of the state, yeah. We were all shocked, and he wasn't even our governor.
I absolutely adore his wife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She
love her, too. Yeah.
So and I love that line where she said something, somebody asked her, well, you go back, she said, well, I'm definitely not his soulmate, obviously. When he said that, I thought, how stupid can you be, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, this is my soulmate. I was going, gee, it's flabbergasting. It really is flabbergasting.
Well, and the other thing, too, that frightens me, and I try real hard not to be a prude, but it's becoming so acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
sure.
We're not shocked anymore like we used to be. And that to me is alarming.
The paparazzi has dehumanized us. I mean, we're not sensitive to things. You know, we are just desensitized.
It's frightening that, you know, honor and integrity and all of those things don't seem to count as much.
Yeah, but that must have shocked everybody in your state.
Yeah. And you talk about a beloved person, you know.
Yes.
He is quirky, though.
Yeah.
Well, we know that. We know that he is.
No, but I mean, he is kind of a quirky guy. You get the rapport of a quirky guy.
Mm-hmm. But then again, I think most of those guys are. I mean, Who in the world is willing to live that kind of life anyway? You have to be a little bit strange.
I just every night in the evening news and all, I'm just going, boys, just talk to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just without an agenda. Just have a conversation.
And without it being pre-written,
Yeah, just have a conversation with each other. Have a conversation about healthcare. Have a conversation about, have a conversation without just name-calling and criticism and yelling and, you know, we're out here going, just have a conversation.
Well, I must say this on the air. I adore Dennis Kucinich.
Who?
Dennis Kucinich.
Kate always knows all these people I don't know.
Dennis Kucinich came on the air last night and said he would not sign the president's federal bill because he says the president is acting like, you know, it's some sort of single-payer plan like they have in Europe. He said, but it's not. It's all, it's a bailout for the insurance companies, he said. And by God, that's exactly what it is. And he's not signing the bill, and he could be the one that breaks it. Now, I'll tell you what, I love him.
It's going to be broken. I mean, come on. All these Democrats are quitting and walking out. And
well, you cannot bail out the insurance companies. This is just ridiculous. And so,
well, we bailed out the, you know, banks.
Yes.
Yep.
And the automobile dealers. And
then we gave the CEOs a tip for doing their job so badly. You give them a tip. Can you imagine any of us doing the job that badly and getting a tip?
I say the buck has to stop somewhere, and it has to stop with that health care bill. It is the most miserable excuse for any legislation that has ever come down the pike. And I'm
don't you love Kate when she gets on her political thing? I just love it. Here we go.
It is, and I'm not saying that because I am a Republican or because I'm, you know, I'm saying it because it's the truth. I mean, it is ridiculous. So
I just look at that thing when they laid that book down on that stand that was like how tall?
Mm-hmm.
How could anybody read all that?
Looks like income tax rules, yeah.
Oh, God.
right. Well, we're trying to get our health care bill, House Bill 1660 and Senate Bill 400 passed in the state. And if they pass that stupid federal bill before we pass our bill, we don't have a chance in this state. So I'm hoping that Dennis Kucinich breaks it, and they are still arguing for the next several months, and we'll pass our bill, and we'll be the first in the nation.
I don't think you have to worry about it, Kate.
No, I don't either.
So.
I just,
I'm not worried.
I will
I'm
be
not worried.
Stopped.
I think that it's going to go a while, okay?
No, I just be shocked.
It's poor. Yeah. Believe me, it's the poorest bill. It's just
you know,
feeding into these insurance companies that are first-class murderers. And, you know, anybody who, like myself, who works in healthcare, this is why we cannot tolerate this another minute. It's horrible.
But you do agree that this health reform or whatever it is on the table, and you just wish that these people could sit down, and now that it's up here and it's in front of them, can have a conversation.
Well, I agree with that for sure. Yep.
I mean, just have a conversation.
Yeah, they will not do that. They, you know, unless two of them finally decide that they can communicate. But
yes,
you know,
yes.
I don't, you know, I have not seen that happening yet.
No, you're right. That's very important. Very,
you know, just,
well, I must say that
they have an intelligent conversation about this thing.
Right.
I must say that, you know, right now Pluto has gone into Capricorn. And the underbelly of everything is coming up, just everything, including Pluto and Capricorn, and including the Earth acting out in major kind of, you know, ways like earthquakes and snowstorms and all these kind of catastrophic environmental things that are happening with the planet. I mean, it's just Pluto and Capricorn. I mean, it's Earth, and it's just, you know, a lot of things are just vibrating, and plutonically, you would agree, Kate, that the health system sucks. These people need to somehow come to really talking, and we just pray that that's what happens through all this, that somehow these people get past Democrat, Republican, Independent, all this stuff, and just get in a room and can negotiate.
Well, we met this woman online, Joan and I, this woman on, well, I forget her name, but she has a newspaper called the Good News Gazette. And for 15 minutes every day from now for the next 6 weeks, everybody in the country, she has started a movement where people actually concentrate on these leaders talking to each other, just like you said, Sheila.
God bless her.
People sitting down and talking, and that we need to meditate on this and send that kind of energy to Washington and to all the state governments and every I guess she's concentrating here in the United States. And maybe something will, a good resolution come out of it.
You know, it used to be that senators, it wasn't a full-time job. They went home. They went home to places, and you know, they really were passionate in the olden days and came in and really listened to each other, the writers of the Constitution and all. It's not like that anymore. These guys are entitled buffoons. I'm sorry, here I go. We're going to get radio calls now.
Well, we have a full chat room, and people are...
I bet we do!
People are talking about taxing Coca-Cola.
That was funny. I really howled. I thought that was funny.
Well,
if we tax Coca-Cola, people will drink less Coca-Cola. Come on!
No, I don't think so. People like that drink.
Well, I'll tell you what my vision is, and we're running out of minutes here, but, you know, I have a vision of this country where everybody's just alike, you know. And I'm a smoker, and I love my Coca-Cola, so let's be up front here. But, you know, I say over and over to the grandchildren, there are fat people, and there are skinny people, and there are short people, and there are tall people, and there are people that like Coca-Cola, and there are people that don't like Coca-Cola, and that's okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Joan, I think you should be a commercial for Coca-Cola.
Oh, did you see Stepford Wives? Do you know that
yes.
movie?
I do know it very well. I haven't
seen
it, but
we're just not all alike. You know?
Yeah.
We're human beings, and we're all different, and we have wonderful interests and talents and abilities and differences, and it's
I thought that
okay.
Sandra.
Huh?
Sandra Bullock's speech was profound about that, her acceptance speech. She said her mother said that to her. Her mother said that we're all different, and she said she taught me that from a little girl, that we should, you know, love diversity.
Right.
Yeah.
We have to treasure our diversity.
Yes. And
you know,
it was,
it just frightens me. But anyway...
I just have to say, first time in 82 years, a woman got it. She got two Oscars in her hand standing up there at the end. You never saw that before.
No. Yeah, I want to say that, speaking of tobacco, and I think this is fascinating, next week, Mr. 2020 is going to be on the show, and his wife, Carol, and he is a Native American, and he's going to talk about the sacred aspects of tobacco, and that will be fascinating.
Oh, yeah. I cannot wait to hear him. He's always interesting anyway, but yeah. That's going to be good. And again, it's back to that, choices. It's all about choices and differences and honoring our differences, and we're kind of getting away from that. But anyway.
Yeah. And I think we need to realize that we can't control other people. And that would be part of enabling, you know. We can't, we have to allow people to do what it is they're going to do. Try to lead them in the direction that would be less self-destructive. But in the end, it's their karma. And that's hard to deal with, especially if you're watching somebody die from alcoholism or, you know, die from some sort of drug addiction. And watching people die is difficult for people. But in the end, you do what you can do, but you can't control people. You can't control situations.
No.
Well, my favorite sentence I will go out with is "What you think of me is none of my business." You know.
Right.
Yeah.
It's all
yeah.
about you. It's not
right.
about me.
Right.
You know, and you know, we can experience what people are going through from the outside: alcoholism, all kinds of, you know, food addiction, all of that. But, you know, unless we're really experiencing that person's life and in their shoes, we really don't know at all. I always say, if I'm dealing with somebody that uses heroin or something, you know, I don't know the high on that. I have never experienced it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I, you know, for me, I say I'm not equipped to deal with this.
Yeah.
You know, I can give you suggestions and all that kind of stuff, but I really don't, I never had that experience.
Right.
No, I don't want that experience, but, you know, I really cannot judge their experience.
Right.
I really can't do that. So I try.
I know.
And I can't criticize their experience either.
Now, we all tend to be more critical and judgmental of the people in public life, I think. But even that, you know, it's not worth it.
Well, these people that have to go through this in public, it's horrendous. I mean, that is between Tiger Woods and his wife. It's really none of our business.
It truly is.
You know, so
we've run out of minutes.
We have.
Yeah.
What about?
Like really?
We're like really.
Yes.
How about
we're not going to chat with anybody. Ha ha.
Hard to believe.
But we had fun.
Yes. Love right now. Bye.
Bye.
Love you.
Bye.
Bye bye. And Joan, as you know, I'm going to be playing music for Mother and Child. And that is music by C.D. Jensen, who was our dear friend from Denmark.